Now, they were the closest of sisters and the best of friends. But when, in a twist of fate, their uncle Edward decided to abdicate the throne, the dynamic between Elizabeth and Margaret was dramatically altered. Margaret would have to curtsy to the sister she called Lilibet and bow to her wishes. Well, Andrew Morton is once again here to tell us more about his latest book. It's always lovely to chat with you, Andrew.
No, nice to talk to you again.
So, they were born 4 years apart. They were obviously raised together. They wore the same clothes, but they had very, very different personalities.
Yes, indeed. And it does remind me an awful lot of how the wheel turns and how William and Harry seem to match Lilibet and Margaret.
Yeah.
Elizabeth was very stolid, sober, even cautious. Margaret, far more of the boisterous roustabout. She used to say, "Disobedience is my joy." And that contrast you can see as well with Harry and with William. William, a young man who is, you know, very cautious, pragmatic, takes a long time before he makes his mind up. Harry, far more impulsive, just like his auntie Margaret was.
Yeah. I wonder if it's something to do with being the firstborn.
Well, I think that, if anything, that this shows you, as sisters, how remarkably similar they are to other sisters. And also, as firstborn, you're always the one who's, you know, chastised more often. You're the one who's where the parents' expectations are higher. And for the younger siblings, they're often given a lot freer rein because the parents themselves are more relaxed. And it's exactly the same with Lilibet and Margaret.
Yeah. What do you think she would have thought about the Harry and William situation? Because I remember she was very critical of Diana when she did her interview on TV, so maybe she would be of Harry as well.
Oh, Margaret was, as I described in the book, was very much the Praetorian guard to the Queen, very loyal, would never hear a word said against her. And she would have been horrified at the idea of Harry, second born, like Margaret herself, saying that William was trapped in his circumstances, as was his father, Prince Charles, most disloyal. And that's why, by the way, as you mentioned there, she fell out with Diana. She felt that Diana was very disloyal in her Panorama interview, where she talked about the fact that she didn't think Prince Charles was fit to be king and that she wanted to be queen of people's hearts. Well, as far as Margaret was concerned, there was only one queen, and that was Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah. And we've mentioned a couple of times that Margaret called her sister Lilibet, which is an affectionate name. Apparently, Queen Elizabeth called her sister Bud.
Yes, and she was the rose. Margaret was the bud. And in a funny kind of way, she did bloom, but she, an awful lot of, as it were, her plant remained in bud. She was, unlike the Queen, who had her life laid down and logged before her, although she did say there were no hard and fast rules, she just followed what her father did. Margaret was always struggling to find a role where she would be acknowledged by the great British public. And, you know, you see that with, say, Princess Anne, rather, who found Save the Children Fund, and that gave her a kind of a narrative of the hard-working royal princess, whereas Margaret was the one with the famous glass whiskey in hand, cigarette in her holder, crooning till the early hours on her piano at 1 o'clock court, Kensington Palace.
Yeah, I suppose as the second sister, she was able to do that. I mean, I wonder if the roles were reversed, if the Queen would have been like that, or maybe it just wasn't her personality.
Well, the Queen did like to go dancing at the Phoenicia Hotel in Malta, where she and Prince Philip enjoyed a couple of years of marital bliss away from the limelight. But really, Margaret was more of a metropolitan princess than Elizabeth, who was far more of a country woman. I mean, it always makes me laugh that during the midst of the Annus Horribilis, she and Prince Philip went ferreting, looking for on the Sandringham estate. I don't think you'd ever have caught Princess Margaret doing that.
No, I can't see that either. I can't. And I read a bit of a spoiler alert, which really surprised me, because we've all read things and we've all seen The Crown, but it was actually Princess Margaret who chose not to marry Peter Townsend, not the Queen who told her she couldn't.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, the popular narrative is that, you know, the Queen put her foot down, said, you've got to do your duty, and Margaret obeyed. During my research at the National Archives and elsewhere, I discovered that actually that wasn't quite the case. Margaret didn't have to give up as much as it seems in the popular imagination. According to, you know, the traditional sources, they say she had to give up her title, her place in line of succession, civil list, and go live in exile. Well, none of that was the case. The Prime Minister Eden, he was Prime Minister in the mid-1950s when this whole drama between Princess Margaret and Group Captain Peter Townsend, the divorcee, blew up. He told her, no, you just have to give up your place in the line of succession, which was no big deal because Charles and Anne were ahead of her. And Group Captain Peter Townsend might even get some money from a civil list and a title. So the irony is that she never told Peter Townsend this, and he was blithely unaware that she didn't really have to give up an awful lot. And I think it's rather ironic that Edward VIII, during the abdication, he was the one who held all the cards, made the decisions. He was the one who said, I'm out abdicating. Wallace Simpson said, please don't, but she was ignored. Similarly with Peter Townsend, he thought that Margaret was being bullied by her sister and by everybody else, when in actual fact she wasn't. She had the whip hand. So it was a complete flip-flop from the abdication.
Wow. It sounds like she put duty before everything else, even her own personal love.
Well, she actually could have been having an affair, according to the daughter of Eddie Fisher, the 50s crooner, who had bore a remarkable resemblance to Peter Townsend.
Oh.
And his daughter, Carrie, suggested that they had a very romantic love affair. So, you know, that adds a little twist to that little drama, doesn't it?
Just, yeah. And I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, but I feel like we know the Queen. She's a strong woman. She's dutiful. She's steady. But Margaret remains a puzzle. I've read lots of conflicting opinions. Gore Vidal found her far too bright for her own station, but Robert Harris thought her dimmer than he'd expected. And other people just said she was a very unhappy woman, which is, I think, what I sort of portray her as.
I think she went through seasons. I think that the great season of her life was when she was in the early days of her marriage to Lord Snowden, to Tony Armstrong Jones, the photographer, and they were very happy then. They went, you know, they were the most glamorous couple in the world, actually, along with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. And you know, we talk about, you know, Meghan and Harry being super popular and famous. Well, I mean, you know, eat your hearts out, because these two were just the face of the swinging 60s, and they were having a great time. She had the children that she always wanted, but neither of them were faithful, and that was the curse. And it was the start of this long run where royal marriages came under enormous pressure and enormous failure.
Yeah, what a shame. It seems like Harry and William aren't. It was difficult to know really at the funeral of Prince Philip, but they haven't been on speaking terms. Were Elizabeth and Margaret? Did they always get on, even in later life?
There was this undertow of loyalty from Margaret to her sister, and they did have their squabbles over Roddy Llewellyn, who was at the time an out of work young man, 13 years junior to Princess Margaret, who she took up with and had this long affair with. And the irony is, you know, it was in the days before cougars and toy boys were common vernacular, and people were horrified that Princess Margaret enjoyed a dalliance with a man so much younger than her and not of her social class. And, you know, if it had been the other way around, and it had been an older man who was wealthy and had a stately home in the background, nobody would have cared a hoot. But people got very censorious about it. And the Queen saw that the crown was being attacked by members of Parliament, by the media, and, you know, she complained to her private secretary saying, what are we going to do about my sister's roustabout life? So there was a bit of a distance during that period.
Yeah. The crown certainly has invited a new generation to our monarchy. Do you think that both the women are portrayed correctly?
Well, I mean, there's far more of a antagonism between the two than was in real life. Although, all that to be said, I mean, there was one occasion when Macmillan, the Prime Minister, was talking to the Queen in her salon, in her study, and at Windsor Castle, Margaret marched in a bathrobe and said, if you weren't Queen, nobody would talk to you, and then walked out. So, as Margaret always said, we have rows, but we don't have rifts. Rows were what they had. So, yeah, from time to time, their relationship was like any warring sisters. You know, as kids, they would fight and pinch each other and bite one another. As adults, the Queen was often quite chary of her sister to see what's the latest scandal you've got the monarchy involved in.
I wonder if she was actually a little envious of her as well, because she could do things. She was like the alter ego, wasn't she?
Absolutely. I mean, she's the one who could go dancing. She could, remember, it's not like the Queen was some old footy. She loved going out dancing. She and Prince Philip, you know, loves to dance like fantastic. And, you know, she'd be going to these dreary film galas, which she complained about once to Churchill. And Margaret would go see the films she wanted with who she wanted and, you know, then go out clubbing and have a great time. And then she'd come to bed with them as the bill bottles are being delivered. And then, you know, the young queen would be up reading her red boxes and, you know, meeting diplomats whilst, Margaret was enjoying the high life.
Yeah.
So, yes, jealousy. Yes, there was.
Yes, of course. And probably from both sides. I mean, none of them probably would have chosen to be born, you know, I mean, I'm sure the Queen probably wouldn't have chosen to have been born the Queen.
No, it's a very good point. I mean, she was, like her father, reluctant.
Yeah.
I mean, her father was a reluctant monarch, George VI. He never expected to be king. And the Queen, when she was princess, she used to pray every night that her mother would have a baby boy, which would have meant that he would have jumped over the line of succession, and she could have done what she always wanted to do, just enjoy country life, marry a farmer, and have kids and raise horses and dogs, which, of course, she's done very successfully at Sandringham.
Yeah, indeed, yes. She's done an amazing job. I mean, they both did all these years, you know, 100 years nearly, Prince Philip. I think she's 95, isn't she, the Queen?
No, she was 95 April the 21st,
So. Well done. It's always interesting chatting to you. I know we've chatted a few times about various subjects and, of course, your famous book on Diana. Can I ask what's next?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff happening at the moment. I'm just looking at Churchill, actually, and seeing what he has to say about the royal family.
Interesting. Well, if people want to buy this book, it's called Elizabeth and Margaret, The Intimate World of the Windsor Sisters, and it is, of course, by Andrew Morton, and we're selling it on our website. Andrew, it is always an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thanks a lot. Always nice to talk to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.